Chapter 6. They want 120 bucks to do the test on the birds. Marina told me on the phone. She had already called around and found a place called Quality Labs, about 30 kilometers away in Dalton. We'll need another 10 bucks for a courier. I can ride them there on my bike, I told her. It's okay, I already called. The courier is going to be here in 20 minutes. But the money, that's okay too. My father said he'd chip in. But you'll have to get over here with your part of the loot. The guy at the lab said he had to have the money up front, cash. He knew he was dealing with a kid. I'm gonna have to dust it if I want to get over there in 20 minutes, I said. I was a little knocked out by the way Marina was so efficient. I mean, she didn't mess around. If it was just me, I probably would have just changed my mind about following through with tests for the poor Mergensers. But not this lady. You have good legs, she said. In fact, I think you have great legs. You can do it. I do, I said, not knowing how to take this kind of compliment from a girl. Yes, stupid, you do. Now use them to get you over here with your money, Buster. And by the way, my father wants you to bring along Jack. So I was off on the road again. If nothing else, this business was with Marina was going to keep me in good shape. Jack seemed to be quite happy to be in his little metal cage again, with the wind in his face. I had this cookie image of me being his wings. If he couldn't fly, then I could fly for him. I only wished I could do the same for the Mergensers. I always felt like I had as much right on the road as anybody in a car. I probably didn't stay close enough to the shoulder. And when I sailed down the road, I spaced out a little too much if there wasn't much traffic. So here I was on my way to see Marina for the second time that day. I was going to turn over my life savings to her to help find out what killed a couple of birds, when I already knew what had killed them. It was pretty obvious, but it wasn't enough just to say it was the crud from the landfill. We needed hard facts. My mind was running through all this just as I was passing the side road that went down to the incinerator dump site. I loved the sound of my mountain bike tires gripping the hard pavement as I rolled along at a steep. Well, I suppose I wasn't paying attention when this garbage truck came hauling us out onto the main road from the dump. The idiot driving didn't stop at the stop sign. I guess he figured he didn't see any cars. So what was the point? He gunned the big diesel engine and pulled out in front of me. I had a split second to decide if I wanted to bail out or go splat into it. And then there was Jack to worry about. These things happen pretty quick, and it's funny how your mind actually goes into hyperdrive and sorts it all out to come up with a decision, sometimes right, sometimes wrong. I knew that if I tried to veer out of the way, I'd plow straight into the barbed wire fence surrounding the entrance to the landfill, and I had never been friends with barbed wire. I also didn't feel like chewing the steel plates on the side of the truck. So I grabbed onto Jack's cage with one hand, lifting it under my left arm. Then I found the loose stones of the gravel on the side of the road and threw the bike into a quick right turn and a slide. Still holding Jack with one hand and the handlebars with the other, I made a reasonably controlled wipeout. My right leg took the worst of it as I laid the bike down and skidded along the gravel until we stopped. Meanwhile, the truck had made its turn and was pumping ugly clouds of black exhaust out of its stack. The driver had never even seen me. He was on down the road grinding gears on his merry way. I simply wasn't a problem of his. Jack was squawking at me now. He was probably thinking that human beings had some real strange habits, but he was okay. I had kept him from smashing down in the ground. I crawled out from under my bike and surveyed my ripped pants and the blood on my leg from where I'd scraped skin against stones. I stood up and yelled something real nasty at the truck driver, who I'm sure never heard me above the roar of his engine. The bike was okay. I was happy about that. The body would heal itself, but if I wrecked my bike, it would have cost money to fix. And right now, I was hurrying off to give all my hard-earned cash to Marina. With my pride in really bad shape, I strapped Jack back onto my bike and rode off, pumping my bad leg as hard as my good leg and feeling an occasional drop of blood trickle down into my sock. I kept telling myself that this was like our second date, since I've never gone out on what most guys would call a real date. I figured that this was as close as it was going to get. I'd heard other guys brag about making out with girls on their first or second date, and sometimes they'd brag about how much money they spent ahead of time to go out to dinner or movie or whatever. I figured I had a good story for guys like Vickman and Greg when I got back together with them. I met this crazy girl named Marina, right? And like on our second date, I blew $30 to have a couple of dead ducks dissected. No, somehow I didn't think those turkeys would be able to appreciate it. I saw the Purelator truck sitting in Marina's driveway when I got there. "Did you bring the money?" she asked me. "No hi, no hello, nothing." I handed over the loot. She put it in an envelope and sealed it up in the box that had. I figured the dead birds and the water sample. When the Purelator guy took off, Marina looked at my shredded pants and bloody leg. "What happened to you?" she asked. I had a slight disagreement with my Mack truck about who had the right of way. "I won't ask who won," she said. "You okay?" There was more warmth in her voice now, more concern. She looked genuinely worried, this time about me. I smiled, soaking in the attention. "Yeah, I'm okay. In fact, I feel like $1 million. She held out her hand. Jack and I followed her inside. In the kitchen, she introduced me to her mom, who had the same fiery red eyes as Marina. Mrs. Ryson was a very pretty woman, but you could tell she'd had a rough time of it. I could read the whole story in her face and the soft but painful way she smiled. It was the story of living with a husband that was not for this world, and it was the story of someone who had lost in a big way. I kept thinking about what Marina had said about being a loser. Maybe we were all losers. Maybe that's what attracted me to Marina. It's what we had in common. "Are you as loony as my daughter?" Mrs. Ryson asked me. "Excuse me?" I asked. I wasn't quite sure where she was coming from. "No, Mom," Marina answered for me. "He's worse, much worse. This is a guy who wears a pink and blue wetsuit, restless with garbage trucks and his spare time, and never goes anywhere without his one-winged seagull." Mrs. Ryson looked at Jack and me and shook her head. I turned to Marina. "I thought you asked me to bring him along." She bobbed me on the arm. "I did. I was just teasing." Jack let out one of his ear-piercing screams just to get in on the conversation. "Does he have to be in here?" Mrs. Ryson asked. "Is that Jack?" I heard the feeble voice of her father say from the other room. "Yes, sir," I said. "I'll take him back outside." "No, no, don't," I asked Marina, "to ask you to bring him. Bring him in, please." I took Jack into Marina's father, who was still sitting in the same lazy boy. He clicked off the TV with the remote. "Set him here," he said. I put Jack's cage down on the table beside the chair. "He's still pretty mean," I said. "Be careful." I still had wounds that were healing from Jack's razor-sharp beak. We had a pretty awkward relationship. He ate food out of my hand, but would have been just as happy to swallow a couple of my fingers if he could rip them off my hand. "We'll be okay," Mr. Ryson said. "You kids go have fun." "You sure?" I asked, watching Mr. Ryson studying Jack's injured wing. I was also worried that Jack would likely do what was natural for him and do some damage to the furniture. But Marina's father was waving us away. In the kitchen, Mrs. Ryson kindly moved on to another room and we were left alone in the afternoon sunshine. "Go have fun," her father had said. Fun wasn't exactly the word I could use to describe being with Marina. She was always pretty serious. Even there in the kitchen, we looked at each other but didn't quite know what to say. When I felt another drop of blood trickle out of my leg and dribble into my sock, I guess I automatically looked down. "Oh, I'm sorry," she said. "Let me fix you up." She took a warm washcloth and began to dab at the scrap. It hurt, I think, but I was too dizzy with the fact that she was touching me to worry about pain. She was very gentle and caring, and I realized that this was the other side of her personality. When she sat back down, I asked her something that had been bugging me. "Did you leave behind a boyfriend back where you came from?" "The guys were all jerks," she said. "They were all hopeless. But you must have gone out with some of them. After all, this was our second date. I wanted some background info. I can't imagine that a girl who, well, looks like you didn't have guys tripping all over each other to go out with you." She laughed at the compliment but shook it off. "Oh, they'd ask me out, but they hated it when I wanted to talk about anything serious. It turned them right off. Eventually, they just stopped asking. I bored them." "I could never think of you as boring." "I guess I could say the same about you," she countered. "Do we know what we're getting into?" I asked her. I really meant the business with the lab and the landfill leak, but I think I wanted my question to have a double meaning. "No," she answered. "Do you think we know what we're getting into?" "No," I said. "Do you think we should give it up?" This time, maybe it was her question that had the double meaning. "No way," I told her. We sat for a long time after that and didn't talk, but it was strange because I didn't feel uncomfortable about it all. When I went in to pick up Jack for the trip home, I saw a really weird sight. Mr. Ryerson had Jack out of his cage and was holding the bird in the crook of his arm. Marina's father looked half asleep, but one hand was gently stroking the bird. Jack seemed perfectly content. This from a bird whose greatest joy in life seemed to be trying to dismember the guy who fed him his favorite fish scraps. We stood there looking at her father and the bird, not saying anything. Then Marina whispered, "Could we keep Jack here? I'll build him a big pen outside." "Sure," I said, "if you don't think he'll be any trouble." "No trouble at all," Marina answered.